Dave, I'm a sexaholic.
Hey.
Hey, family, and I'll be your leader for this meeting. In the spirit of the fifth tradition to carry this message, this session will be recorded. The recorder will not be turned off during the session. And if you don't wish to be recorded, you may participate by listening or attend another session. We ask that those who choose to step up to the mic so that those who listen to the recording can follow the discussion. And a little note to me, don't tamper with the recording equipment. So nobody come up here and turn it off. Okay? Don't do that. Join me in the Serenity Prayer. Serenity Prayer.
God,
grant the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thy will, not mine, be done. Purpose of SA, Sexaholics Anonymous, is a fellowship of men and women who share their common experience, strength, and hope with each other so that they may solve their common problems and help others recover. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop lusting and become sexually sober. There are no dues or fees for SA membership. We're self-supporting through our own contributions. And SA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Doesn't wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sexually sober and to help others achieve sexual sobriety. Welcome. So glad you all are here. I wanted to share with you the title of the workshop when I was approached. Again, my name is Dave. Intimacy without sex or lust. And I noticed a number of folks showed up for this, so there's got to be a few fellow followers in this path of understanding that perhaps sex and lust can be separated from intimacy. That has been my experience, which I will share with you briefly, and then really encourage you to share your experience, strength, and hope with me, because I'm here to learn. I'm still sick. So, intimacy, in search of the real connection, huh? How many of you had a chance to watch Monty Python and the Holy Grail? Okay, the Holy Grail. Well, what the heck are these comics like us, these insane people, looking for? Is it money? Is it power? What are we really after? Is it sex?
All of it.
Could be all. You know, for some of us who are truly crazy. I'll tell you a short story here. You know, at some point in my crazy existence, somewhere in high school, I decided that I was going to be the best of the best. I was going to be a top gun. And so I decided to put my best efforts forth and learn to do something that very few people even want to do or consider doing. And so I did. I went to Naval Academy. And graduated in 1969. Those of you around then, it was a pretty rough time to graduate. I would have rather stayed in college, but it was the only place that was actually sort of a sanctioned prison. You know, you lived on a river where, you know, 6 months of the year it was cold and it was kind of miserable, and it was all guys. You know, what a dream, huh? For a sex addict, well, maybe for some of you, but not, you know, for me, it was kind of rough. You know, we didn't even let us out the first year. And so I became a little more deeply entrenched in my pornography addiction because, you know, wherever we would go at the academy, you know, there would be these places that were completely clean, pristine. If you walked up front to look at the midshipman's quarters and you walk in, you know, you have the folds, the tucks, the neat, the everything. And then if you go into Bancroft Hall, behind the scenes, you would open the backs of closets and you would have the displays of all this stuff that wasn't very helpful for my addiction. And then, of course, on graduation, you know, decided that I was going to get down to flight training. I began to fly the A-4 Skyhawk and then got assigned to a fleet squadron and flew the A-70 Corsair II off the Forrestal for cruises. Went to the Mediterranean for 10 months, a couple times on a cruise, and managed to stay alive through 286 carrier landings, which was a feat in and of itself that a power greater than myself actually allowed me to survive. And those of you who have been out on dark nights of the ship, you know, if you haven't, you haven't missed much. I thought that this would really be the ticket for my life adventure, the quest, you know, back to the high adventure. You know, this is what it really was all about. And I was so fritting insecure. I could not have a relationship with any other person because I was always striving to be the best of the best. Well, you don't do well in that kind of environment in relationship. And so I would go through relationships like water. I mean, every time I went into port, I would drink a different cup of water, and it was an awful, awful, painful existence. But I had really, frankly, no awareness of that at all, because somewhere along the line, in all of that glitz, in all of that power, that obsession, I felt like this was what was really important. This is what life was all about. And so I was so fixated on that in my compulsion that I didn't have a chance of understanding that somehow, deep down inside, I was looking for a real connection. Became a person of faith, you know, and I thought, well, maybe this will change, you know, this God of my understanding, only to find that the God of my understanding ended up having me go down to strike operations on the Forrestal in one morning, and the Navy and the Air Force combined in what we call the Strategic Integrated Operation Plan, which was a plan to destroy the Soviet Union in the event of a nuclear attack. That was my primary mission. And so I went down to plan this target near the Black Sea. And on the way, my contingency target was Prague, Czechoslovakia. Not a place in Prague, the rail yards ostensibly, but my target with the A-7 was Prague itself. And the aiming point was the Gothic Cathedral. Those of you who have been to Prague, was the top. The cathedral was the point where the 360 kiloton nuclear weapon would have had to have gone off. That was my job. Single seat, sole responsibility. And I began to look very closely at what having a relationship with a power greater than myself was at that point in time. Do I put principles before loyalty to a country? Do I put principle out there? Is this the right thing to do? So, I mean, this God of my understanding early on has me in these kinds of situations where I have choices. And that's what I'm saying to you in terms of choices about intimacy or not, for me to have had to have delivered, and we never really know what we would have had to do. But if I had had to do that, that would have been the absolute antithesis of what I was really looking for, the real connection. And in the way I lived it out, it didn't have to happen to me, and I was so thankful that didn't happen. But it set me on the path with this addictive behavior, you know, looking good on the outside, and I developed this elaborate system of medicating my feelings. And I'm sure there's no one else in here that's ever done that before. I would use lust, I would use porn, I would use dating, and all that's kind of the boring stuff. When you're into adventure and intensity, it doesn't really matter. Because whatever I could use, it would distract me from the higher power-shaped hole right inside. And so I can tell you out of my own experience, strength, and hope that the adventure path doesn't work. Okay? And the God of my understanding, like the wonderful image we saw today at lunch, just kind of sitting there and waiting and hanging out, and had that kind of confidence that maybe someday I'd get the picture. Flash forward, 20 years or so. I got married in 1972, came out off cruise, immediately went back on cruise. My wife got to travel around Europe and follow the ship and do all that stuff. And we had no earthly idea of what intimacy really was. My wife came out of a family of two alcoholic parents. My dad was a dry drunk. My mother was a control freak, talked a lot. And so we went into this relationship. And for those of you that are really looking for the prescription for dating, we dated 2 weeks before I asked her to marry me. And then we got married 6 weeks later. And then 3 days later, went on cruise. So, if you really are looking for anti-intimacy advice, come on up afterwards. But what I did see in our relationship at that point, and maybe there was something that was an indicator here, was a sense of hope. We had a little bit of common ground, and that common ground was a shared faith perspective, which was a beginning to a spiritual life for us. And I can say today without reservation that if you're looking for adventure, it has been the single great adventure of my life to now be married to the same woman after 37 years, and knowing our strengths and our weaknesses has been the great good news. And my wife works program and has been involved in another fellowship for about 12 years. And my son also works our program here of recovery. And so it does work if I choose to work it. A little bit more about intimacy. There's some misperceptions. The perceptions I had initially was that that this relationship thing was going to be risk-free. Wrong. One of my misperceptions was that if I was stayed a loner and was the best of the best, that there would be safety in that. That was wrong. Sex is equal to love. That was wrong. So what I've done in terms of learning how program works is define that as I work the steps, that honesty and openness and willingness are the things that really do work. And that allows the God of my understanding to come in and change me. And so that I don't end up being the prisoner of Shion, the one who's very chains and he became friends, as I create the prison of my own making. And I've locked myself in there. And now, my gosh, I don't want to be in there anymore. I can come out and I can play and I can have friends. My gosh, a host of friends. And the promises of the program have really come true for me. So what do we do about intimacy without sex? Well, my wife and I, my son and I, we all trust the God of our understanding. We do a lot of camping, a lot of hiking, a lot of appreciation of beauty. We live on the side of the mountain in North Carolina where there's a stream. And 6 months of the year we watch the seasons and change. And half the year we live in Florida and we have a great community of people in both places. You all. And, I like to do garage sailing. It's going to be intimate doing garage sailing with your spouse, if you choose to do that, or a friend. We have 12-step meetings. This is lifeblood. We build relationships. Wherever we go, I think we're really tasked to do that. Dr. Bob said it best, the end game of this entire thing is love and service. That's why we're here. Tradition 5, step 12. That's what I'm giving my life away doing right now. And I have the great, great gift of being, financially independent at this point. Not particularly because anything that I did was phenomenal, but because the God of my understanding said, okay, be financially independent, take away the greed monster in your life, and see what you can do. And that is to reach out to others and to be with you and to learn from you as well as give my life. And one little thing to finish up with for me, Dana and I do what we call our 10-step daily check-in. And this is a really kind of neat way that we found that works for us to build intimacy. We'll go out in the morning on our hike, and as we're headed up the mountain, one of us usually walks in front, and the person that walks in front and takes the lead gets to hear the other person from the backside say, "You know, yesterday while you were, doing the dishes, I didn't feel like I really wanted to do that, and so I told you in a pretty harsh way, 'Nah, it's not for me today.' And I was a little bit scratchy there and harsh, and I just want to say I was wrong for doing that. I haven't done a couple more things. There's usually at least a couple things a day. And then after that I said, 'But you know, it really was wonderful was to watch you make those phone calls to the people that you care about and to affirm them for doing the kind of work that you know is right. I love the way that you sponsor people. You know, the way you just are their friend. And you tell them, you know, how you see it, and you share your experience, strength, and hope with them. And I love the way that you're able to rub on my shoulders at night. And there's some real practiced ways of developing what I now understand as intimacy. You know, and if the sex happens, hey, well, that's nice too. But it's not the goal. It's not the end game. It's just, for me, it's how we get there. It's the journey. So I want to thank you for the chance to just share a little bit of my story. And what I'd like to do is just to invite you, as one by one, if you'd like to come on up and share a little bit about maybe some ways to have intimacy without having lust or sex. Open mic. Just say your name and where you're from.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
I'm Paul, a sexaholic from Concord, Massachusetts. And I sure didn't expect to do this. I thought somebody a lot wiser and more experienced than I would come to the fore. I have one advantage. Well, I have several advantages. I have the world's most wonderful wife. We've been married now for 58 years. So we've had plenty of opportunity to learn and forgive each other's failings. She's my best friend, my worst critic, my greatest lover. I have another advantage. I'll be 82 years old next month, and I think maybe my body is starting to slow down at last. There was a possibly apocryphal story about a very talented black musician from the late 19th, early 20th century, whose name I forget at the moment, but anyway, somewhere around the age of 89 or 90, he was interviewed by a reporter or something like that, who asked him, what does it feel like to be without sex at this age? He said, "I don't know, you'll have to ask somebody else." All right, so having dispensed all that wisdom, one way that I've discovered, and this has become true more in the last 4 or 5 years, I guess, intimacy without sex is, first of all, it doesn't happen at night. That is sex. By that time, we're both pretty tired. We need a night's sleep before we can decide whether or not either one or both of us wants to do anything about it. But one thing we do pretty much without fail is we have at least two snuggles a day. One is when we first wake up in the morning. That's when we have our pillow talk. And it's about anything and everything that happens in our lives, good, bad, or indifferent. It doesn't very often now lead to sex. When it does, it's a beautiful thing, and it's a bonus for both of us. But again, as your first speaker mentioned, that isn't the object. The other is my wife likes to listen to the great Dr. Phil every day on television at 3 o'clock. And I'm retired, so I have time free in the afternoons. I don't always listen with her, but I do make it a point to come back into the bedroom where the television is at 4 o'clock, and we have another little snuggle. And sometimes we'll talk about what she's seen on television, and sometimes what I've been doing, what I'm worried about. But at any rate, twice within 24 hours, we are physically close and spiritually close, I think, and certainly emotionally close. And that is God's greatest gift to me. Thanks.
My name is Mike. I'm a sexaholic.
Hi, Mike.
From Providence, Rhode Island, and I am powerless over lust. I apologize because I missed your share. I'm sorry. But just listening to the end of your share and to Paul's share, I am not married, never been married, and there is a need for intimacy in my life. And I'm a little scared. What do I have to share? Something very beautiful. My experience of intimacy, recently, the last couple of months, I've been doing a little exercise for myself, and that is, during the day, when have I experienced a connection with someone else? And I try to relish that moment. And what I've, I do it practically every day, what I've noticed, let me just share this. I'm on the telephone talking to one of the fellas. It's wonderful. It's what God wants me to be doing. And God lets me connect with that person, and that person connect with me. At the time, we may be talking very seriously, but when I go back at night and reflect on what happened, wow, a real connection. And intimacy, seeing into me and seeing into the other person, is wonderful. It's not a physical intimacy. As a unmarried person, I can't expect to have sexual intimacy, and I can't expect really to have a physical, a hug or something like that once in a while. But really, it's the spiritual intimacy of connecting with another person. It may be walking down the street and usually it's talking and listening with another person where I experience intimacy. The connection. Thank you very much.
I'm Wallace from Memphis, Tennessee, sex lover.
Hey, Wallace.
Sex addict, sexaholic. I think one of the best things that my wife and I did when we first got married is we went away to a place to do some couples work. And one of the things that they taught us is about, you know, a lot of this reactivity we share in common. And the thing that I would do is I would go over and automatically react to things she said before I ever listened to what she was saying. And the thing they taught me to do was to pause before I respond, repeat back to her what she said to me, and ask for clarification. And that felt really, really weird, but practicing those skills has taught me to actually not, I mean, I don't have to do that every single time she says it, but it's like it makes me, instead of thinking about my response to her when she's talking to me, I'm actually listening to what she's saying and kind of feeling that part of the moment. And the other thing we do is we do a thing called knees to knees, and probably 2 to 3 times a week we sit down in a chair facing each other, touching knees, and we look each other in the eye and we talk. And that has opened up a lot of stuff, because it's like it's very easy for me to have a conversation with my wife and not really be connected in the conversation. It's kind of like I'm kind of disengaged in something else at the same time that I'm having the conversation. But when you're sitting knees to knees with somebody, it really makes you really get into that conversation and connect in that moment and what's going on then, and be emotionally present and available. And the third thing, you know, like I've heard several people say, is every night before we go to bed, we do a check-in, and we check in on what stood out from the day, what we're feeling like at that moment, and what we have to clean up. And it becomes an automatic thing before each one of us goes to bed at night. We eyeball to eyeball and do that. And it doesn't take 10 minutes to do, but it's one of those things, once I've developed that habit, I really get a feel for what's going on in her life over a long period of time, and I'm able to kind of like identify with, you know, when she's feeling crazy, it isn't necessarily anything that I'm doing. And that was like a hard thing for me to get when I first got married. You know, she was pissed off at me all the time, and it just took me a long time to realize that maybe she's pissed off about other things. I just happen to be a good vent. So I don't know. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Clint. I'm from St. Louis. I'm a sexaholic. I've been married for 6 years now, and for the first 5.5 years, I always believed that having sex with my wife was showing her love. It's the only way I knew how. And then one day my sponsor looked at me and he said, you know, the biggest thing about love and intimacy is doing things that makes your partner happy, not just everything about you, which I've always been like. So but me and my wife have really worked on this, and I love to hunt, and my wife loves to shop. So, and I hate to shop, and she never liked to hunt, but we have really been working on it where she's been learning to hunt with me. I take her out in the woods, we walk around, you know, I just teach her things as much as I know, and then I'll go shopping with her, and I will, even if I don't want to go, I will force myself to enjoy it. That way she enjoys it. And we have found in doing these things that, you know, the little things that we don't really like to do, but the other one does, that it brings so much more to our marriage. We're so much happier with each other now than we were for the first 5.5 years. And that is the biggest thing I've learned in this program about intimacy so far. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Hey, I'm Alan. I'm a sex addict. Been married for 30 years. She should have divorced me 29 years and 362 days ago. But that's beside the point. I'm still married, and we have a great marriage now. My sobriety's 2.5 years. 3 years ago, when we came into the program, my kids weren't going to talk to me, and that was an intimacy that I had to learn. And now, all of our intimacies collide with one another, the two children and my wife. It started out with just my wife and I communicating again. We never communicated really on a one-to-one level. The next thing we did was, like the first guy said, you know, wake up in the morning and hug, talk to one another. You know, what have you got planned for the day? Things like that. Talk during the day with one another. Absolutely have to do that. And, you know, check in with one another. As I'm coming home, call her and ask her if she needs anything. We live kind of out in the boonies a little bit, and it's a hassle to go back out sometimes. Then at night, we literally will spend at least 10 minutes holding one another. Maybe not talking, maybe not doing anything else, but just holding one another. And that's been a really big thing. Touch, I didn't want to do ever. You know, if it didn't lead to sex, forget it. And that's been a big change for me. Then the other thing that we added was, you know, out in public, just like holding hands, a little kiss when we're going to separate from one another. Those are just little intimacies that I never allowed because I wanted the ultimate, nothing else. And you know, we started date nights. Date nights, real important. Our date nights grew, started out as an hour and have grown to a couple days a week. We have also added in, we go to RCA meetings together. They're very important. Our couple coupleship, it takes your own individual recovery along with coupleship recovery. But you definitely have to work on your yourself first. It's all been great. If 3 years ago, if you were to ask me, well, you know, 3 years ago, if you were to ask me if I would be married today, nope. I was barely living at home. But today, we have a great marriage. She's here today, too, and it's just a great journey. It's a better marriage than I had when we got married 30 years ago. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Alan, and I'm from Atlanta, Georgia, and I am a sexaholic. I've been in the program for 2 years. I'm also single. I've never been physically attracted to females my entire life. And after 2 years of sobriety and working the steps, I'm still not physically attracted to females. But one thing this program has given me is that I think I now know what intimacy and love and appreciation is. Because now when I see a male who I think is physically attractive, who used to be an object of lust for me, and I get to know that person, it's no longer the same thing. It's I feel an appreciation, I feel love, and the lust diminishes. So for me, intimacy now means love and appreciation, accepting other people's character defects, but still appreciating that they're in my life. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Elliot, and I'm a sexaholic from New Jersey. One commonality that I've heard from a lot of the shares today is the idea of intimacy being similar to spirituality. And what's been my experience is that in order for me to become more spiritually connected to my higher power, I need to become more vulnerable and more willing to let go of the outcome. And what I'm thinking is that the same is true of intimacy between human beings. In order for me to become more intimate, I need to become more vulnerable and more willing to give up the outcome. And that's what I'm working on right now. I'm dealing with step three. I'm redoing step three for, I don't know, the third time. Working on this concept of allowing myself to become more vulnerable. And the way I see it, the way I understand it, is if I can become vulnerable with my higher power and allow him to work his miracles, then I can learn to do it with other human beings. And that's when I will find true intimacy. Something that I'm working on, something that I'm doing a little bit every day, slowly. I am not currently with my wife, which is something that saddens me greatly. I am working on my relationship. I am working on trying to repair my marriage. It's slow going. But there is movement in the right direction, and it happens most often when I'm able to be vulnerable with my wife and tell her what I'm really thinking, what I'm really feeling, and let her tell me what she's really thinking, what she's really feeling, and not taking it personally. It is what it is. And I don't have to make the outcome happen. And that's how I'm trying to rebuild the intimacy with my wife that I lost because of this addiction. A little bit, one day at a time. Thanks.
Hi, I'm Richard. I'm from Charlotte.
Hey, Richard.
For about 3 years sobriety, a little over 10 years married. I liked a lot of things that were said. Couple of thoughts. I think intimacy for me starts with my wife starts with what I do in the program. I didn't know how to be intimate with my wife. I learned it in the program by being honest with other people. You know, by taking the first step, by calling other people, by calling 3 or 4 people a day, by having a sobriety partner, and just being honest where I was. Going to meetings, sharing my first step, listening to others. I knew how to lie. I knew how to cover things over. I knew how to come up with a great story. But how to be honest and connected with other people was something that I knew something about, but in a lot of ways I learned a lot more in the program. I spent time in the program when I was in the program at first, where, you know, my wife and I didn't know if we would make it, where we both thought about divorce, where we but we stayed because of the kids, and we argued and fought a lot. And today, that's not where things are. You know, we have a good relationship, a much better relationship, and especially I think in the last year and a half, there's been a lot more laughter, and where I can, I'm willing to go beyond my own comfort zone and share things that I would have kept to myself before. And I just find that that's part of recovery is happening. And I first learned it, you know, just by being intimate in the sense of honest and open and connected with other people in the program, you know. And I learned it, I like what was said also about spirituality. I think that's really true. I find, as I've gone through the 11th step, you know, for me, one of the things I've learned to do in terms of prayer is I do something I learned about from Bill W. and something that St. Ignatius and that kind of background called the discernment examine. So I look every day, what am I grateful for? What's happened in the last day that I see, what happened in the last 24 hours? Where do I see maybe God at work? What is he saying to me? Where have I been wrong? I'm going to look at my 10th step work and where I need to make changes. And I'm going to look who I need to pray for and things I need to pray for and for myself and others. And I'm going to look in hope toward the next day. You know, what does God want me to do? And when I take that time to pray, when I take that time to meditate and to be open to God, I found first I developed intimacy with others in the program. Then I began to develop greater intimacy with God because I had a faith, but I was better at being up in here rather than being down in my gut, you know, up in my head. And the program taught me how to have intimacy with God. And out of that, and out of those changes personally, instead of taking my wife's inventory and working on her problems, which was what I did really well about before, a lot of stuff has been that was getting in the way of my character defects gets put aside, and then there's a natural place for intimacy to grow. The sexual relationship has definitely got tremendously better, but I really enjoy the relationship. And that the sexuality can flow out of that. That I'm with her, I'm not with some other person. I'm with my wife when I'm with her sexually. But that I would give up what's happening sexually, which is good, to have what's happening in terms of intimacy. You know, I really enjoy being in love with my wife and having a romance with my wife. And the program's given me that. And I enjoy the intimacy and closeness and friendships. For people who are not married, I think that the potential for intimacy and joy is still the same. I can still have that closeness with others. I find that in the program, you know, if I can sit down and listen. And that's not something I knew how to do with that work in the steps. So thanks.
Hey everybody, I'm Slava, sexaholic. I just want to share one little thing that I've learned recently. I'm definitely still very crazy, and I've been in recovery over 2 years, and I'm struggling with objectifying my wife, and I want to find something that's a little bit better than that. And at the suggestion of my sponsor, a couple of months ago, my wife and I started doing a little bit of reading. We have this book that's called Why Marriages Fail and How to Make Sure That Yours Doesn't, and it's not approved literature and all that, but it really doesn't matter what book it is. But I've discovered that it's such a wonderful experience to sit down with my wife, and she reads a page, I read a page, and she reads a page, and it's about our relationship, and it's kind of a spiritual experience for me too, because I didn't realize that there was a third thing between us, and that's the relationship. All this other was about me getting what I want, she gets what she wants, and we're both happy. But now we're both kind of nurturing something else. And you know, if you want to try it, I highly recommend it. And the only problem is that I found it can be a little bit of turn on too, because you know that connection is just very, very magical. And that's all I wanted to share. Thanks.
I'm Edwin, a sex addict from here in Middle Tennessee. I'm sober today, and I think if I make a couple more meetings this afternoon, I might make it till tonight, too. So I appreciate you guys being here. And one of the things that I can't help think about is something that happened to me last night regarding the intimacy, is that while I was listening to the Essanon talk after the dinner, I was getting pretty ticked off because my wife's not in recovery. And a lot of resentment was building because right before that talk, I had received a call wanting to know when I was going to be getting home. And because she had things she needed to do. And so I was all geared up for when I got home to be asked how many more of these meetings I was going to have to go to. And I was able to make about 10 calls. Got to talk to 2 people on the way home. And able to get rid of that resentment. And so when I walked in the house, I hadn't already had 5 arguments with her in my head in the car. And I was peaceful. And she didn't do any of that. All that stuff that I thought she was going to do, none of it happened. And we were able to talk and come up with a plan about the thing that was bothering her as far as why she needed me home. And everything was wonderful. And we didn't have a check-in or any of that stuff. But there was some intimacy just because there wasn't any fighting. And that was a pretty powerful thing. And I really appreciated the share from the gentleman who wasn't married, because I came in thinking, oh, this is about between me and my wife. And when he made that comment, it made me then think about with my kids. And a similar situation. A few weeks ago, we homeschooled my daughter and found out that one of the things she's normally pretty responsible on, she hadn't been fulfilling in one of her courses, and about 5 weeks behind on doing some things she was supposed to do. And my wife called me, and of course I was hot. I mean, I was mad. And I was able to cast it out in a meeting and talk about it, made some calls. And so by the time I got home that night and to talk to my daughter, I wasn't. She wasn't in danger of being killed. And we actually had a really good conversation. And so I guess as far as like a real issue, a tool that has helped me that I wanted to share, was just making the phone calls to other folks in the program, cast out those feelings that are blocking the intimacy, because that last night would not have been remotely intimate if I hadn't made those phone calls. It would have been hideous. It would have been a fight, and then she would have been bitter today that I was coming back, and we'd have had fights today. And as it is, actually things are really good. So thanks. Thank you.
Sean, I'm a sexaholic. I didn't want to come up here because people terrify me. That's why I have difficulty with intimacy. Good illustration of intimacy for me, and the solution for me today is 15 years ago, I was introduced to a religious belief where I was taught a system of denial, to deny my feelings, to deny reality, to stuff it down. If I said things out loud, they would happen, that sort of thing. And if I talk to God about it, look out, you know, and don't dare let the devil hear it, you know, or he's going to use it against me. And it wasn't until that I began to defy that and tell God exactly, you know, my higher power exactly what I was thinking, feeling, or doing, you know, that I had spiritual intimacy, you know, with God. And that's the solution today for me in my program, not only with God, but with other people. My sponsor has this sick idea that if I call somebody every time, you know, I have a lust thought or I want to rubberneck and give myself a neck ache and turn my head and look or fantasize, that if I make a phone call instead, that that I can get past that. And it, you know, sitting here just now, it reminded me that the key is intimacy, because my addiction is settling for counterfeits to intimacy. You know, I'm always looking for something to make me feel intimate with another human being, because I'm so terrified of people, you know, rejection, whatever the consequence could be, because I can't control it. I settle for something that will mimic that. And today, when I call you guys, and I have a core group of guys, and I have lots of phone numbers of other people I can call, and I talk to my sponsor, when I go to meetings, I get that void filled. You know, I get real intimacy instead of settling for the counterfeit. And I'm thankful for this fellowship, and I'm thankful for you guys for allowing God to supply that intimacy that I need. Thanks.
I'm Tim, recovering sexaholic. What I've learned about intimacy is that at first, for me, it starts with safety. Because if I don't provide an environment of safety for my wife or whoever I'm trying to be intimate with, then they're not going to move on to the next step, which has been shared as vulnerability. Because my tendency in my marriage is there's been so much conflict and anger, is that the rare times that she was vulnerable, I stored those as weapons to use in later fights. And today, you know, I don't have to do that. I can, you know, when she says, I want to be vulnerable, you know, that's the indication for me that I have to create a safe environment to give her the willingness to be vulnerable. And as far as, you know, my belief that, you know, intimacy is, or sex is equal to intimacy, you know, I learned in treatment that what you have before your sexual relations is what you're going to have after your sexual relations. So if we've got a crappy marriage where we're fighting and we just really don't like each other, so let's go try to have sex to make things all better, it's going to be the same thing afterwards. And I've experienced that during, you know, our drunk times in our marriage, you know. So our sexual relations were very unsatisfying. You know, it's like, is that it? You know, I'm going to have to divorce her to find somebody, you know, the addict, to find somebody who I can have better sex with. But reality is, as I've gotten recovery and I'm having, you know, sober sexual relations with my wife and, you know, trying not to expect that, you know, we really have, you know, sexual intimacy, because first comes the true intimacy of the emotional and the spiritual. Thanks.
I'm Andrew F. from Baltimore, and I'm a sexaholic. And I am a single sexaholic. I've never been married. I haven't dated in, over 5 years. So intimacy as a married man is something I don't understand very well. But, you know, I'm starting to learn and consider a few things. I bought a house 2 years ago, and I was living alone up until recently when I got a tenant through the program. And in order to prepare for this tenant to come to my house, I mean, I really cleaned my house up, and I tried to establish an environment of, you know, order and peace, and, you know, clean stuff out of cabinets where he could put his stuff. And then when he moved in, I mean, there was one night that he was talking on the phone and yelling at 2 a.m. I mean, it woke me up, and, I just took a deep breath, and the next day told him, you know, that's not okay. But I'm just starting to understand the one aspect of intimacy is establishing peace at home, and, you know, setting boundaries, and, you know, just respecting others. Thank you for letting me share.
Hello, my name is Mike. I'm a grateful recovering sexaholic from St. Louis. First of all, Dave, I just want to thank you for your share. I can honestly say I've been there, done that. I was an Air Force fighter pilot, so I don't have all the carrier landings, but I'm very thankful for the years that that God gave me to serve in the military. And I had the same complexes that Dave had, all of them. In fact, if you'd have walked into my room in Vietnam, I had the wall of female parts. I'll just leave it at that. And everybody got a real laugh out of that when they came into my room. That's how sick and I was at the time. I've just made a few notes here. My wife and I have been married for 12 years. And for me, as a loner and someone who isolated all the time, I really never did understand intimacy. The reason I didn't understand intimacy is because I didn't comprehend love and what love was and what it meant. And so for me, no love, no intimacy was the first thing. And it was okay to love yourself before you loved other people. And I didn't know how to do that. So I had to learn how to love myself first before I could love other people. Intimacy for me means being vulnerable. I hated being vulnerable. I didn't want anybody to see. I wore my mask so great. No one ever saw me with my mask off. For me, there's a lot of non-verbal forms of intimacy. What I do for my wife now, and I've learned this, it's taken me 30 years, my routine in the morning. By the way, my wife stays up very late. I am a go to bed early and wake up early, go to bed late and wake up late for my wife. So when she comes to bed at night, most of the time I'm asleep. She snuggles up against me, and I'll consciously or subconsciously I'll know she's there, and that's her time to snuggle. Sometimes she talks to me, sometimes she doesn't. You know, in the morning I get up, I clean out the dishwasher, I make the coffee for her, I put her vitamins in her bathroom. We have separate bathrooms. And I usually leave her a love note on the coffee machine because I leave early. Those are all non-verbal things that tell her that she's special to me. And for me, those are intimate things. Why? Because I never did them. I never even thought about them. I read all the books and all this other stuff, but I wasn't motivated to do it because I really didn't care about them. And those are the things that really mean a lot for me. I was so into myself and my ego and all of what I wanted that I never saw intimacy. When I had sex or I had lust for someone, I never connected the dots as far as the actions. They never entered my mind. So when I read the thing, it says intimacy without sex and lust. What's that? You know, I don't even know what that is. You know, I never had it until my wife and I really kind of came into the program, and like one of the other guys said, is my wife's not in the program, but I know she's watching, she's looking, she's seeing the changes. I share with her when she asks me and stuff like that, but I'm not pushing her, so hopefully she'll be in here maybe by next year. Thank you.
I'm Bob. I'm a sex addict from California. I wanted to add two words to the conversation this afternoon. Trust and empathy. That those are the two words which have helped me the most. I recognized that I needed to regain, I needed to become trustworthy, and I have been striving for that in my daily action. Someone mentioned calling before arriving home. I make it a point to call a lot. And I really try to anticipate that my wife will have suspicions that I'm acting out. And I try to be proactive and to allay those suspicions using the telephone to keep in touch and keep in communication. And, you know, that's a real proactive program for me to become trustworthy, to become worthy of her trust so that she is not suspicious of me when we're together or when we're not together. The second one is empathy, that for many, many, many years I was not in touch with my own feelings, and her feelings were totally irrelevant to me, inconsequential, I didn't care. Through the 12 steps, I've become in touch with my own feelings and being willing to accept those and admit those and recognize them and experience them and deal with them without medicating myself in one way or another. And I find that to have an intimate relationship with my wife, I also have to feel what she's feeling. I have to allow my heart to open up to her heart. And an awful lot of what came in the early days of recovery was I was opening up to her pain, to her anger, to her resentment, to her hostility, to her to negative feelings. And I had to go ahead and experience those and work through them myself, recognize them, admit them, deal with them, live with them, and share those feelings with her. I think that's eased the burden for her, but for me it's been me being able to really feel what she feels. And when we are together, I really make it a point to try to not only feel what I'm feeling, but also feel what she's feeling. And it's hard to do for me. I'm not tuned into that. But I feel like working the steps, I can get to the point where we will have an empathetic relationship where I'm, you know, more and more transparent to her and we are more and more vulnerable to each other. So thank you for that.
I want to thank everyone for the shares today. It's really helped me. So I appreciate you. Let's close with a third step prayer.